Testing? Yeah, we're on. Okay. Good morning, everybody. Give everybody a chance to come in and get seated. And we'll get ready to begin this meeting. So we'd like to start our meeting with a flag salute. I'd ask you to stand and join me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, nice to see everyone here this morning, and we're going to start our meeting by asking for a roll call, please.
Board Member Gibson. Board Member Guthrie.
Here.
Board Member Wixom.
Here.
Board Member Moreno.
Here.
Board Member Ortiz Legg.
Here.
Board Member Paulding.
Here.
Board Member Pichon. Board Member Rushing.
Here.
Board Member Strong.
Here.
Board Member Waggy. Vice President Peace.
Yes, here.
President Arnold.
Yes, I'm here.
Ex officio Caltrans John.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Okay, thank you. And we're now going to open this meeting for public comments concerning items that are not on the agenda, for items not on the agenda. So if anyone wishes to speak about something in general, this is your time. And I have one speaker request, Eric Greening.
Thank you. Eric Greening, I'll be speaking to a couple of the agenda items on slow cog substance issues, but right now I'm speaking sort of to a logistical issue that's going to affect this meeting. My understanding is that everyone who is carrying a cell phone, which is probably everyone in this room but me, is going to get a loud alarm signal at 11:20 Pacific time. And this could be a very distracting thing. I don't know, since I don't use the things, I don't know whether one can prevent that sound from suddenly emerging or whatever. But that might be a good time to take a break around that time, just to avoid disruption of whatever is going on. I also will tell you that to avoid neurological overstimulation, I intend to be out of here at that hour. And so if I leave while one of you is in the middle of saying something that may be very worthwhile and important, don't take it personally. I'm not leaving because of what you're saying. Apart from that, I look forward to the substance of the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I don't have any other requests to speak on things that are not on the agenda. So that will bring us down to item number 3. On our agenda, which is a proclamation, our Road to Zero proclamation. And Vice President Andy Peace is going to read this in a few minutes. But first of all, I'll ask if there is any public comment on this item. Seeing none, I would just like to say our special guests that are in the audience today from Public Safety, we're going to ask you after the proclamation is read to join us for a photo op. This is going to be a fun opportunity today to take, get a really great picture. We have representatives today from California Highway Patrol, Cal Fire, Paso Fires, City of San Luis Obispo Police Department, County Emergency Medical Services, County Public Works, County Public Health, the Regional Transit Authority, and the County Bicycle Advisory Committee. And I'll give a shout out to a few of the folks that I know are here, I believe are here, Chandler Stewart from CHP and Greg Klingenberg, Josh Taylor, Cal Fire, Randy Harris, Paso Fire, Fred Mickle, City of San Luis PD, Vince Perusi, EMS, John Diodati from Public Works, or some of these will be different representatives, but giving a shout out to these different departments. I think I saw Dr. Bornstein here from our county health, Jeff Straw from RTA, Leah Brooks and Skip Emmerine are active transportation advocates, and I know there are others here in the audience. So again, after the proclamation is read, we'll invite you up for a photo opportunity. And with that, we're going to have our Vice President Andy Pease read this proclamation.
Great. Thank you so much, everyone, for being here. Proclamation, Road to Zero, Roadway Fatalities and Serious Injury Safety Target. The following proclamation is hereby offered and read. Whereas, a safe transportation system approach prioritizes people and acknowledges that people will inevitably make mistakes, which may lead to serious injuries and fatalities. And whereas everyone shares the responsibility for road safety, including education, enforcement, legislation, infrastructure improvements, and technology advancements, as well as those who plan, design, build, operate, make policy, and use our transportation system. And whereas SLOCOG recognizes there are numerous fatal and serious life-altering injuries annually on our region's public roads, and the number of fatalities and severe injuries in the region continues to grow despite efforts to reduce these incidents. And whereas a basic tenet of Road to Zero is that fatal and serious crashes are not inevitable, and death and severe injury are not an acceptable cost for using our public roadway system. And whereas traffic safety is a social equity issue, with a need to address underlying factors and causes and improve safety for populations historically impacted disproportionately by fatal and severe crashes. And whereas the California Department of Transportation has a vision of zero fatalities and serious injuries in California by 2050, and the U.S. Department of Transportation has adopted the safe systems approach. And whereas a data-driven safe systems approach is proven to be effective at reducing traffic fatalities and injuries, including taking into account all aspects of the transportation environment and recognizing there are vulnerable roadway users. And whereas it is critical for our local jurisdictions to prioritize the Road to Zero safety target and to build complete streets and begin to ensure the safety of our pedestrians, cyclists, and all road users of all ages and abilities. And now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Andy Pease, on behalf of Debbie Arnold, SLOCOG Board President, and the entire Board of Directors, hereby affirm the agency's commitment and support for a Road to Zero safety target and proclaim our goal to eliminate all fatal and serious roadway injuries in our region by 2050. Thank you.
Great, thank you. And we'll ask all of our agency partners to come up to the front so we can take that group photo. Okay, that's got to be some kind of historical picture to have that many community partners in one picture. So we thank all of our folks that have come in this morning. I don't have any requests to speak on this, but I do want to open it up for board comments. So if there are any comments from the board, I don't see any lights on there. Dawn?
I mean, I think it's really important to comment on the great proclamation that you read, Ms. Pease, in regards to safety Every day we see that we have more on the roads, and that means more of everything, whether it's the electric bikes, whether it's the electric cars, we have the vehicles, the truck. I mean, there's just so much activity, and our cyclists. And I think it's just the awareness of how we are going to be cognizant, our situational awareness in particular, on who's going in what direction and what's happening. I see a lot of near misses. I see a lot of people taking the kind of approach like they're the only person on the road, whatever vehicle or unit that they're in. And I always want to promote the ability to have the visibility and the fluorescent wear if you're out there without any cab around you or car. And I just want to thank SOCOG and all the partners for coming out.
Okay, thank you,
Debbie?
Jimmy.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to echo Supervisor Ortiz-Legg's comments and thank everybody for here, for those in law enforcement that do the speed enforcement and keep our roads safe, for those who are educating the public constantly, our public health officer, public works, and so many of the partners. You know, in Napomo, for example, in my district, it's a community of 18,000 people that I hear constantly from wanting to see more active routes to school, safe routes to school, things like that. And we have communities that weren't designed to be as safe for pedestrians and cyclists as one would hope. And this board's commitment to our programs like the Community Betterment Program, Safe Routes to School, et cetera, really starts to kind of close that gap. And we always have funding limitations, and we can't do everything overnight, but we can commit to goals, and a road to zero is quite an ambitious goal. So thank you for the resolution and for the hard work.
Great. And Fred?
And thank you very much, and thank you everyone for coming. In my numerous positions for both the SOCOG and for the city, I do a lot of traveling, and I sit on the transportation committees and chair one of the transportation committees nationally. The League of California Cities and the National Association of Regional Councils, all of our regional governments of the United States, have both taken up this same type of resolution up to 2 years ago and have been pushing this, and that is why we're interested also in rail safety and how they park the trains, and to keep our crossings safe, to keep our highways safe. There are so many different ways, and this is why we need to continue to budget for the proper amount of money to take care of our roads, our streets, our bridges, as well as our rail and our air and sea traffic. All of them are important. Thank you very much.
Great. All righty. With that, then, we're going to move on to item number 4 in our agenda and have hear our executive director's report.
Pete? Did you take action on that last item?
Oh, do we need to? Let's see here. Board action. Receive information. Do we need
to? I thought we were going to adopt the presentation, but.
Just receive.
Okay. I guess we're going to adopt it later.
You make a good point. We are. It's like a resolution, right?
It's like a resolution, and
so I think shouldn't we?
That we need a board action to adopt the proclamation.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I will move that we approve the resolution.
Second.
Okay. We had Fred and we had Jimmy, right? Okay. Jimmy did? Jimmy Paulding. Can this be a voice vote? Or should we roll call vote it? Voice vote? Perfect. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any abstentions or opposition? Great.
That just a quick note, just for the record, it's a proclamation, not a resolution. So it just should be correct. That's what our packet says, proclamation, road to zero, not a resolution.
Perfect. Okay, proclamation. And we covered all bases, so we don't have to worry. Okay, we'll move on to our director's report.
Good morning, President Arnold and board members. Happy to be here today. We had a windfall opportunity. We were contacted. These are a couple of items here on the executive director's report that are not in the consent agenda and not on the board item, so they may be a little bit of a surprise to you. We had a windfall opportunity about a week ago. We were contacted by Congressman Carbajal saying that Rick Larson was coming through town at the Cliffs Hotel. It was very nice. We were able to sit down and talk with him about some of our key projects where we're looking for federal discretionary funding. Congressman Larson is in the 2nd District from the state of Washington, and he's vice chair of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee in Congress. We're able to highlight the needs we have on Antelope Grade and on Union Road in Paso Robles, on the roundabout project on 46 West and 101 in Paso Robles, as well as Prado Road and Buckley Road roundabout project. So it was great to have him here, and we're doing follow-up with his staff about details on all of those projects. Thank you for everybody who participated in Walk to School Day. It was a big event, over 6,000 students. Thank you, President Arnold, for participating with Santa Margarita Elementary and Don Ortiz-Legg for at Sunshimer School. Thank you. And Jimmy at Harlow, assuming you made it this morning. Okay, you don't have to. And Heather was at San Benito Elementary School. Thank you. I believe John Pashong went to Templeton Elementary, and Andy Pease was at Pacheco. So thanks for your participation. And I think we even had some council members from your jurisdictions that participated in some of their local events, including Karen Bright in Grover Beach. So you obviously don't know this acronym of CSIS, but we're tracking this closely, and Fred Strong is probably aware of it on our CalCOG, our regional forum. And this is a process that Caltrans is going through to make sure that the projects they participate and fund are consistent with their overall strategy in the state for transportation. Frankly, we're a little bit concerned about it because it reduces some flexibility with capacity improving projects. As a rural county, we're still fighting for that right to be able to have access to state funds that do expand capacity. We don't have all the capacity we need. We get it that increasing VMT adds capacity and greenhouse gas emissions, but there are some projects that we can do that are measured that we want to keep that flexibility. A lot of the projects that your jurisdictions want have to go through this compliance check to make sure they're consistent with CSIS. So we're trying to make sure that we can still have access to the funds that we need. And, we are working towards a sales tax for transportation. You can see on the slide here that many of our partner agencies in green from Santa Cruz are accruing $24 million a year, and even the small county of San Benito, $10 million a year, and Monterey, $36 million a year, and Santa Barbara, about $50 million a year. We're doing focus groups in North County, South County, North Coast, Central Area. We hope to have a draft investment plan sketched out the end of this year or early next year. The next opportunity for polling is really going to be after the March election. So at this time, there's no real point in polling. Originally, we thought we were going to be polling at this time and coming back for an earlier vote, but it's really better to put it off. And so we'll be back to the board in May with a decision whether or not to go to the local jurisdictions, probably our April meeting, and then the local jurisdictions will need to decide in May whether we want to qualify for the November 2024 ballot. Broadband, we continue to track what's going on in broadband. We don't really have a formal role. We are convening some bi-monthly public agency meetings. There's a lot of competition for the money that's been apportioned to San Luis Obispo County. Caltrans is doing a lot of work on the middle mile projects. Many of the local jurisdictions are really focused on the last mile connectivity. I think there's various sub-regions that'll be competing for this money, and we're happy to support many of the projects that are asking for funding through our county. We're not picking winners or losers, but most of the projects seem to make sense. Intercity rail activities, a lot's going on with intercity rail. We're seen as the hub of the Central Coast, between north and south. Obviously, at the state, there's a lot of attention on the high-speed rail project in the valley. Your adopted board position is we don't oppose that project, but we think that this project should happen earlier and first because we can build support for an eventual high-speed rail project. The Pacific Surfliner ridership is rebounding. They're at about maybe 70 May almost 80% of the prior ridership is doing better than any of the other state corridors. There's a federal program where we've applied with Caltrans for up to $500,000 in planning money to identify the capital improvements necessary to expand intercity rail and get connections to the north from San Luis Obispo instead of just the Coast Starlight train. We're having a pretty big meeting in Santa Barbara on October 20th. Andy Pease, your representative, serves on that committee. We do have a new opportunity with funding that we'll talk about at the end of the meeting with this transit and intercity rail capital program, where we have $33 million programmed to the county to decide how much for rail, how much for transit. We're working closely with the transit operators on identifying those electrification projects. We got a grant, $447,000, working with the county and the city of Morro Bay and parks to identify strategies to improve the resiliency of the corridor between Los Osos and Morro Bay. Obviously, with sea level rise and other issues, when that connectivity is broken, it's a much longer distance for emergency travel and any travel at all to school, et cetera. And we have some staff on the move. We have three new employees. Daniel, if you could stand up. We released Daniel a couple of years ago and to Portland, and now we've brought him back. He was doing the traffic model before, and he'll be working on public transit issues. Lance is another. Go ahead, stand up. Lance is a new employee, a Cal Poly grad from environmental management. He's diving deep into the rail issues with me, and he'll be working on the programming side of the shop. And then we have Jacob Kramer. Stand up. Thank you. Jake went to school in Loyola Marymount, and he's a San Luis Tiger. He's a local boy, and we're happy to have him in the administrative division of our agency. And then, Lori, stand up, please. We're going to miss you. 13 years at SLOCOG. Lori Kramer has kept us on the straight and narrow and making sure that, you know, 2 + 2 = 4. You know, our budget has gotten so complex. You know, 2 years ago, we had a $5 million annual budget. Now we have a $10 million annual budget. You know, 4 years ago, it was probably a $2 or $3 million annual budget. So with the 30 different funding sources flowing through our agency, all with different guidelines and regulations, it's incredibly complex. And so we're going to miss you. But we know that your replacement, Ashley Wave, will be on the spot to help fill that gap. We'll miss you dearly. Thank you for your participation at SLOCOG. And with that, I'll see if there's any questions.
Any board questions? No. Fred?
On one thing, on the, I'm trying to think, on the sales tax, I think everybody is aware that many of the cities are also going after one, and we do have a problem with all of us doing it, and what's a concern. So I want to bring this up and see if there's a response, and that is the limit on sales tax in this county is lower than it is in some of the major cities in the state, and that's part of the problem because of the priorities. If all of our measures passed, some of them would not be able to be enacted by law. Unless we can get the legislature to start to treat us all equally and give us all the same limit on our sales tax cap. So I think that maybe we should consider, I'd ask you, Pete, is there any way through our
I can respond to
lobbyists,
that.
Et cetera, that we can maybe work on that?
I believe that the current ballot initiatives proposed by local jurisdictions with the SLOCOG of half-cent increment would not exceed the 2% over the state limit. And James is nodding in concurrence that most of the local ballot initiatives that we're aware of are really to renew, to extend the life of the existing sales taxes. So at this time, we don't need state legislation, and there's no jurisdiction that would be over what would be a 9.25.
I think we may be considering an increase of half a cent, which would put us over.
Okay, well, we'll check with your staff and follow up with you and the local jurisdictions to make sure if we need state legislation, we'll decide whether we need to pursue that.
Thank you.
Don't see any other lights? Last chance? Okay, great. So thank you. We have our Caltrans director's report.
Good morning, everyone. John Olenek, Caltrans District 5. Glad to be here on this special day, really a full day of conversation and initiatives to help address safety in the county. And just to mention, from our Caltrans perspective, our lens of safety, it has different facets to it. You know, we have our SB1 Fix It First initiatives, our asset management programs that go along with that. That is put alongside with our climate initiatives as well, keeping that in mind. Dealing with those to make sure that the road users are safe in that regard. You saw a little something about the CSIS, our investment strategy initiatives, but really all that is kind of bound around our highway safety improvement program. So we have our lens is, you know, continues to get focused on the need. And we see definitely in the state of California and in many of our counties in District 5 an increase in collisions, increase in bicycle and pedestrian type collisions, which is unfortunate. The causes are many and complicated, but as we continue to work together as this board and as partners, we can definitely work on improvements and working together in a collaborative way. One effort I wanted to mention specifically that we're doing is we've connected with the Office of Traffic Safety with funding for an education campaign called Safety is Sharing, Safety is Caring. It's a media campaign to help with bicycle and pedestrian safety. Mm-hmm. So it's an education campaign that's going forward. Just as one example, and there certainly are others that we work with our partners, CHP, who were here this morning with the traffic safety funding and Caltrans. Another item I wanted to talk about, you also saw this morning from your executive director his report on the grant that was awarded. So we have a grant season basically, and you know that was our last season for grants, and we're happy that you're able to receive that one as a county. But we have our next grant season that is coming. So this is also our Sustainable Transportation Planning Grant Program. And the next 24-25 cycle is upon us. It came really quick. I mean, we're celebrating one, and we're moving on to our next one. So just to announce to all the members that on October 12th at 1:30, we are going to have a virtual workshop to talk about this next grant season and the Sustainable Transportation Planning Grant opportunities. So that's October 12th at 1:30. Moving on, in other news, we have opened the northbound Highway 101 Camp Roberts rest stop after many delays having to do with supplies and electrical issues not showing up. So things common to most of our construction efforts for probably most of our jurisdictions, but happy to say that rest stop is now open and functional. An event happening this week and actually interesting today is the California Coast Classic. It's a bicycle tour. And today it's actually making its leg from Cambria to Oceano. So I don't know the exact route, but be on the lookout in case you happen to be traversing any of those roads today. And then tomorrow it moves on to Los Olivos and then Friday down to Ventura. Then the last note I'll just mention, let's see if I can pull it up here, is one of our press releases recently talked about a long-term closure. This is our neighbors to the east in Kern County, but a long-term closure of Highway 46 in Lost Hills. So our partners in District 6, Caltrans, and we continue to promote their press releases because a lot of our traffic is interregional that way. So there are detours available. They do take a little extra time, but having that time to have the road closed to do the work and do it right is very important to us. So that's my announcements. Happy to take any questions or provide any comments.
Yes, on Highway 46 closure, I think maybe we should remind them, too, that it's only closed after they get to Highway 33.
Right.
So, therefore, they can still take Highway 33 down and the Lardo
That's right.
turn off in order to get to I-5. Thank you.
Heather?
Yes, if you could speak to the Kerberl Park and Ride lot, it seems like this project... My sense, and I understand the money's kind of been taken and put into that $4.5 million, which is just fine, but are we safe to say that that's probably coming off the list and not happening? I just want to manage expectations.
I don't believe it's in that area of not happening. You know, it's true. We had a portfolio of projects for our Clean California programs, and the Kerber Elk Park and Ride Lot or Mobility Hub was certainly one of them. So what we're dealing with now is essentially, you know, we have some shortfalls of funding. So we're working with our partners to help bridge that gap. And this is something we've been going on for a while. I think, as I understand, the estimate is somewhere around $500,000 for that work. And so we definitely have some shortfalls because we had to move money around to cover some other projects. But we are continually looking to fill that gap. So the work is still ongoing.
My understanding was it was hard to find somebody to actually bid on the project. And
there, so is I don't have all the details in mind, but that is true. There were definitely some bidding issues that created some delays. And that set of funding, that state funding, it needed to be expended at a certain time. So we're not giving up on the project. It's still a priority for us. And so we're going to continue to look for ways to bridge that gap, and possibly with our ACP, with our air district, working them as partners. But it's not something we're putting on the shelf yet.
So the funding's going somewhere for the time being, which is just fine, and we're kind of holding it out there for some future funding and somebody willing to do the work.
Correct.
Okay, yes. Thanks.
Yep. Anyone else? John, I just wanted to ask you again that construction closure that you're talking about near Lost Hills, when does that start?
That started this week.
It started this week.
Right. It is closed. It is a full closure. The detours, I'll just kind of note the detour specifically for the record. So the northern detour will use I-5 at State Route 41 around the closure area. And the southern detour will utilize, like Mr. Strong said, the Lurdue Highway throughout 33 to get around the closure area. And it's going to be expected to be in place till about mid-November.
Mid-November. Okay, great. Thank you. Any other questions? I don't have any speaker slips on this, so I'll thank both directors for their reports, and we will move on in the agenda. At this time, I'll open the meeting to public comment on consent agenda items. And let's see here. I have no speaker slips that I can see for consent agenda items, so if anybody has anything to say about consent. Okay, then we're going to ask the board members if
Madam
they have
Chair?
Any. Fred?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was going to move approval of the consent agenda.
Okay. Did anybody have any questions or comments on the consent before we? So we have a motion and
second.
A second. Carla Borchard. Wixom Borchard. What do you have on there? Okay, we have our motion and our second on the consent. So we'll go for a roll call vote, please.
Board Member Strong?
Yes.
Board Member Wixom?
Yes.
Board Member Guthrie?
Yes.
Board Member Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Board Member Ortiz Legg?
Yes.
Board Member Rushing?
Yes.
Board Member Paulding?
Yes.
Vice President Pease?
Yes.
President Arnold?
Yes.
The motion carried.
Perfect. We will be moving on to F1 on our agenda, and John is here to make a presentation on that.
Good morning, Chair Arnold. SLOCOG Board, John D'Annunzio, SLOCOG staff presenting on the Road to Zero. This staff report overviews four strategic areas relating to improving roadway safety. We had the policy proclamation or the Road to Zero Regional Fatalities and Serious Injuries by 2050. This is a policy commitment by SLOCOG Board to an eventual goal of roadway fatalities and serious injuries. We also have the Slow Straight Safe Streets Forum, and I'll discuss what's happening today and tonight as over 60 delegates from the community will convene on topics of safety from over 12 subject area experts. Then we'll talk a little bit about the Road to Zero committee formation and ask you to help us convene a safety task force for approximately 18 months to oversee the development and implementation of a new regional safety action plan. And finally, just overview the regional action plan itself, which has been federally funded. The Road to Zero is a new transportation policy focused on eliminating traffic fatalities and serious injuries within 30 years. The safety target is based on the fact that traffic fatalities are preventable and that zero traffic fatalities and serious injuries is the only acceptable goal. This is not to say that crashes will no longer happen, but that people shouldn't die or have their lives forever changed by them. The proclamation demonstrates that safety is valued across organizations, beginning with the highest ranking city and county officials in the San Luis Obispo region, and including public safety, public health, public works, CHP, CAL FIRE, emergency response, and more. And by accomplishing the leadership commitment today and supporting the Road to Zero as a policy, we are clarifying the promotion of safety on our highway, streets, and roads. So highlighted here are just a few areas of the proclamation where stakeholders and staff work behind the scenes to ensure the language represents the best intentions of our unique region. Every year, about 30 people lose their lives on San Luis Obispo's roadways, and another 150 suffer serious life-changing injuries. The only acceptable goal is zero. And to do that, we need to pivot on our approach that collisions are inevitable, because even though humans make mistakes, again, slight and property damage only collisions will likely still occur, but fatal and serious injuries are preventable. And we are not alone. Safety is also the number one priority for our federal highways and Caltrans partners, who are committed to the four pillars of traffic safety: doubling down on what works, accelerate advanced technology, implement a safe systems approach, and integrate equity. Around the nation, racial minorities are historically impacted disproportionately. And we embark, as we embark on the Safety Action Plan, we want to ensure that we are representing equity and environmental justice and vulnerable road users in the most deliberate and respectful way moving forward. Pedestrians are particularly vulnerable, as is the homeless population. So we'll be working to better understand how traffic collisions impact our most vulnerable road users, including racial minorities, our Black and brown community members, and those living with low income. Last year's Slow Safe Streets Forum theme was creating a culture of safety in San Luis Obispo region. Over 2 days, we held, helped us walk the wheel of the safe system approach, and we had 40 delegates, safety champions from each community advisory group, city council, or public works committees, as well as speakers from the state and federal highways was here. We learned a lot to better prepare ourselves for this year and to seek out and invite new partners, such as the public safety partners we saw this morning. This year is just going to be one day, and the theme is Road to Zero. Here's an example, a photo taken of the field safety walk used to educate community safety champions and provide them with the tools on how to carry out a safety audit in their own communities. This year, we're going up to Santa Margarita. It's not too late to sign up. We're meeting up at Santa Margarita Firehouse at 11 and 11:15. We'll be walking through downtown in the elementary school and finishing at Jay's Country Kitchen around 1:15 for lunch. Tonight, the doors of the Ludwig Center are opening at 5:30, and Chair President Arnold will be there to help kick us off. We'll be starting the evening by looking at ambulance call-out data gathered by County Emergency Medical Services Agency and hearing from a variety of panelists, including personal stories and best practices from neighboring safety task forces. The US 101 south of Salinas Traffic Safety Alliance will be coming down from Monterey. And Santa Barbara Supervisor Joan Hartman, who is chair of the State Route 154 Safety Task Force, will be coming up this evening. The California Office of Traffic Safety will be on hand, as well as many of our own regional safety professionals, advocates, and staff. We're going to finish the evening by looking at safety issues unique to the US 101 North County and 46 East at Union Road, as we'll be hearing more about in item F3 today. We have historically had safety task forces at work in our county, but in the last 8 to 10 years, as grants have expired or as citizen leaders have moved on, we haven't had a regional safety task force. And as you can see, there are different models for a Road to Zero Safety Committee. And frankly, there is some resistance that we have too many subcommittees. But as safety programs and projects, which will be compiled in the plan, are not just limited to roadway infrastructure components, but also educational programs, projects from CHP, fire, emergency response, and the injury prevention program. About 6 months ago, SLOCOG, in partnership with SLO County Public Works and County Public Health, received a federal Safe Streets for All grant award to develop the regional action plan, and we're using today's item to kick off this plan. Many of our local jurisdictions already have local road safety plans and followed a process similar to this infographic. But in order to make a regional action plan work, it needs to be uniquely SLO. We'll need to work these action plans component outlined here and check these against our federal Safe Streets for All eligibility. And our action plan will follow these seven components. And by the end of today, we will have accomplished component one, the leadership commitment and goal setting. And on October 19th, we will establish number two, our planning structure, by convening a Road to Zero Safety Committee. Here are two additional pieces of information to highlight in the staff report. We're looking to both develop our in-house data services capability, such as with a regional safety dashboard and systemic safety analysis, but also to balance this with the expertise of outside safety consultants who understand best practices from the road safety industry and will help guide us and assist us with a robust, inclusive public engagement leading to meaningful program and project development. Our partnership and close collaboration with County Public Works staff and the County Injury Prevention Program, County Emergency Medical Services Agency, and Caltrans, and other public safety partners is vital over the next 18 months and also as we finalize the scope of work for the RFP. Here's our draft schedule and budget. Finally, I wanted to offer a salute and commiserate for a tragic loss this past summer. Patrick Allen Pittenger was our federal highways rep for only a short time, but he made a big impact on staff and was a transportation planner to his core. He was a fun character at our safety forum last year and was instrumental in SLOCOG securing the federal grant for this program. And while his unexpected death was not traffic-related, he was a champion for road safety, and I considered him a contemporary. So we wanted to take a moment to remember Patrick and celebrate his impact in life as we embark on this federally sponsored program, which itself is mired with human loss and sadness. And with that, here are staff's recommendations.
Thank you. Thank you so much, John. Do we have any board questions or comments on this? Seeing none, I do have one request to speak, and if there are any others, please just come up with a yellow slip at Eric Greening.
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening, and a little over 10 years ago, I was hit by a car. It was sort of the pre-dawn hour. One of those large kind of growly sounding pickup trucks was coming too fast down a street in Atascadero. And I realized very swiftly that it was kind of ticking against some of the vegetation at the side of the road. Fortunately, I leaped. And so the blow was glancing rather than full frontal. If it had been full frontal, I would not be standing here. You wouldn't have seen me for the last 10 years. But I leaped, and it was borderline hit and run. The person never got out of their truck to see what condition I was in, but shouted, "Do you need an ambulance?" And as a person with epilepsy, my first self-preservation thought was, no, I'm fine, because the lights and sirens of an ambulance could have killed me by throwing me into status epilepticus. So there's one ambulance call that might have happened if it hadn't been for that personal consideration. But the person just drove on, and then I had to figure out, well, am I fine? I didn't feel fine, but fortunately I could move. I was even ambulatory, but I developed the visceral sense, speed is violence, and the unequal power of co-occupants of public space between those with motors and hard metal bodies and those with the bodies of humans and other organisms. You just have to be a pedestrian and walk along the side of the road to see how many animals are subject to that violence. I am very thankful that we're actually examining safety from a point of view that incorporates people who are not in metal-bodied structures with motors as people of equal, valid right to life. And so I'm very glad to see this process starting. One thing I would like to see in the legislative platform is to challenge the rule that you can't lower a speed limit unless 85% of the drivers agree by how they're driving. I know it was back in the 50s, there were speed traps when every highway went through every town. I know why it started, but frankly, it is obsolete today, and that is one way legislatively on a separate track from the process you are now kicking off that I would like to see that issue addressed, because the too many people are driving too fast, too regularly, and I'd like us all to be safe in public space. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. So right now, we need a motion on this. Board action will be to receive this update and direct staff to convene a regional road safety steering committee to develop a regional safety action plan and develop a public-facing safety dashboard to support safety analysis, plan, and project development, and issue an RFP to seek qualified consulting services not to exceed $400,000.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. So we have Dawn and Fred.
Can I make a...
Under discussion? Absolutely.
Great. Thank you. So just a quick comment. I'll be pleased to support this, and I do appreciate keeping a very full toolbox. I think understanding that this is not just kind of a one pass, one isolated piece, but being able to keep that as a focus and appreciate the magnitude of the impacts of this work.
Great.
Well said.
Thank you. This is a voice vote, so I will say we have a motion and a second. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any abstentions or opposition to this motion? Perfect. Eddie, you got all that? We got that motion down and everything recorded. Okay, great. So with that, we're moving on to F2 on our agenda, and Jaden has a presentation for us. Thank you.
Hi, good morning, SLOCOG Board. My name is Jaden Hermanson, SLOCOG staff, and I'll be presenting item F2, the Data Services Update Part 1. So we have created a new website. It's called the Data Drive, and it will serve as the new location for the Regional Data Center. And here, interactive data sets will be published for the 8 categories listed above, covering data regionally, by jurisdiction, and over a span of 10 years. For part one, data sets have been published in the population and housing categories. So for population, there's population by jurisdiction, population trends, age cohorts, race and ethnicity, and then there will be more coming soon. And for the housing category, there's the regional housing needs allocation or arena progress, housing development timeline, tenure, vacancy status, and persons per household. Also, more will be coming soon for part two. So now I'll just go over some examples from the website. This is the regional housing needs allocation or arena progress infographic. So we're in the sixth cycle of the arena, and the timeline is 2019 through 2028. The data shows housing units that were completed from 2019 to 2022. 2022 marks 40% of the way through the cycle. So the red line up there shows the number of units if 40% of the allocation was complete. And this assumes that units were built at a steady rate, which doesn't always happen. So regionally, we have 34% of allocated units complete. And the majority of these, if you look at the right, are above moderate income units. And so if we look at the San Luis Obispo progress, we can see most of the regional completed units are coming from San Luis Obispo. Again, most of them are the above moderate income level. SLO has made the most progress overall at 50%, but not in allocation by income, as I mentioned. So now we can look at Paso. Paso has 27% of their allocation complete, and it's the only jurisdiction that has more very low income units built than above moderate income units, and one of the only ones that has any very low income units built. So then at the top there, you can, that's the filter that you can toggle between different jurisdictions to learn more and kind of compare between them. And this data is coming from the Department of Housing and Community Development, or HCD. They have a data dashboard on their website, and this comes from annual progress reports self-reported from jurisdictions. And we also brought this to the Housing Action Team to confirm the data. And this website can also be updated, so if you find anything that looks strange or you want anything added, that can be done. So that's the rate of progress. Then we can look at vacancy status. So in 2021, which is the most recent available data, in Pismo Beach, around 1,700 out of 6,000 units were vacant. So this is 30%. Out of those, 78% of them were vacant for occasional, seasonal, or recreational use. So this makes sense. There's a lot of vacation homes in Pismo. And then if we look at Rio Grande, around 700 out of 8,000 units were vacant, or 8%. And of those, only 37% were vacant for occasional use. And then some of the other categories up there, sold or rented but not occupied, means the unit has been rented or sold but no one has moved in yet. And then the other vacant category means the house is either being renovated, cleaned, foreclosed, abandoned, or vacant for some other reason. So that's just some examples of the infographic. The data drive is linked in the staff report. Feel free to go check it out. There's also some more information on the website. There's a place to view all of SLOCOG's mapping applications. So this is things like the RTO and the disadvantaged communities maps. And there's also some information about our modeling services. And then next week there will be a place to download commonly requested GIS shapefiles. There's some of them are on them now. And then for part two is coming in December. It is mainly just publishing the remaining data sets for population and housing, and then the remaining six, which is fiscal health, safety, bike and pedestrian, ride share, traffic and roads, and transit and rail. So we're excited to have this website. It's an easy to use tool for regional analysis for our region, and we're looking forward to what comes out of it. And this is just an information item.
Thank you so much, Jaden. Do we have any board questions or comments for Jaden? Really amazing to have all this data compiled so easy to use. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Do we have any, I have no request to speak. Any public comment on this item? Not seeing any. This is a receive and file. So Jaden, thank you so much. Oh, Jimmy, I'm sorry.
Oh, no worries.
I can start looking. I'm scanning the area again.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank
I can
you,
see
Debbie.
Your light now.
Just really appreciate the information and data. It's helpful as we look at the implementing mechanisms of the housing and infrastructure planning framework that we recently adopted. And it's nice to know where we are in terms of status and how we can all share in terms of jurisdictions, you know, policies and ideas as to how we can collaborate and implement those goals. So thank you so much for the report.
Thank you. Don?
Yes, I would agree that the website is very user-friendly, and it's amazing how quickly you can just, you know, get some numbers to think about what the potential is, and, of course, the areas that we have this enormous gap in. So very nice presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Jane, thank you very much for the presentation. And we are going to move on to F3 on our agenda, and John D'Annunzio is back up.
Yeah, good morning again, SLOCOG board, John D'Annunzio, SLOCOG staff. This item is about the US 101 North County Mobility Master Plan. We are about at the halfway mark during the process of the master plan, and joining me today is the consultant from DKS, Jim Dankiewicz, who I'll be handing the mic over to make more thorough report. Thanks. Jim, would you like to come up?
Go right. Okay. Thanks. Thanks, John.
Madam Chair, members of the board, good morning. Jim Damkowicz with DKS and the consultant team that was hired to help support SLOCOG staff with this project. We're not the only firm. We're also joined by Wallace Group and Kimley Horn, but it is managed by DKS. So there is our project team. We're also joined by some key partners. That's the County of San Luis Obispo, the cities of Atascadero, and Paso Robles. So our study area is essentially US 101 from Cuesta Grade all the way up to the Monterey County line. There is also a what we call the dog leg of State Route 46 from its juncture with 101 about 5 miles east to Jardine Road. It's just not the main line or State Route 46. It's also, we're looking at parallel facilities, parallel routes, frontage roads, frontage gaps, interchanges, on and off ramps, ramp intersections plus one, so that next service road next adjacent to the ramp intersection. Obviously, this is a multimodal effort, so we're looking at ped and bike connections, transit facilities, park and ride lots, et cetera. So what's the objective of this? Well, you know, we SLOCOG just recently received quite a large grant for the 101 Pismo Five Cities area. This is attempting to have that same success. And as a prerequisite to going after state or federal funds, grant funds, you need to have a multimodal corridor plan in place. And so that's what's really driving this effort. The good news is that back in 2014, we had the US 101 Mobility Master Plan. That was the precursor to all this. So we're going to be taking that plan, refreshing it, updating it. We're going to be adding performance metrics that are more consistent with state guidance now. There was a lot of corridor planning guidance that came out around 2017, 2018 by the California Transportation Commission, which, as you know, is the body that makes those grant funding decisions. So we want to be as consistent with their guidance as possible. You know, a lot of what drives those competitive grant programs is benefit cost analysis. So we'll be, you know, basically doing a very thorough benefit cost. We don't want to leave any benefit on the table, because the higher your benefit cost ratio, the more attractive it is for the CTC to select your project. SB1 has two programs that we're eyeing. That's Solutions for Congested Corridors, and as well as the Trade Corridor Enhancement Program. So we're gearing up for those. This is obviously a stakeholder and public engagement-driven process. So I'll be talking about what we're doing on that front. And last but not least, our vision is connecting communities within and across the region to improve travel time reliability, safety, modal choices, and for the efficient movement of goods and people. So, community engagement. So we do have a website as well, and it includes all the items listed on the slide, the typical things. We encourage you to visit our website and take a look at the information that's provided to get to know more about the project and where we are. A big part of that website is an interactive web-based mapping tool that allows the public to provide input in the comfort of their own home or anywhere they may be. And so here's an update of the amount of traffic that we're getting on the website, as well as the interactive mapping tool. And so we've had quite a lot of visits. We'd like to see more comments. We've received 28 comments. This is as of last Friday. And then the web page has a lot of unique visits, and you see the statistics there. So one of the things that we would really like to try to generate more interest and get folks on this website to provide good input. As you know, the more regional the project is, it's harder to get folks to do that. So we've developed a couple tools to make that happen. But this is just a breakdown of the comments we've received so far. In terms of areas of concern, which is always important, Also, project selections. We've only had three, but we're hoping to get a lot more of those. We are looking for a lot of suggestions with respect to the types of improvements that we could include as part of this this process. So in the community, we've already performed our first workshop. That was back in May. We've had or presented to several groups, Paso Rotary, as well as the Citizens Transportation Committee. Those were both done in September. But upcoming presentations, there'll be one this evening. John was mentioning about the Safe Streets Forum. We'll be talking about this project tonight there. And then we have a list of other events where we're actually going out to be in front of these folks. As you can see in the far right, those are our project ID cards. They provide the UR code to get on the website and use that interactive mapping tool. So we're really going to be pushing that and hopefully get a nice uptick of interest and comments on the website. In terms of our baseline analysis, we have completed that, and I believe you have access to that report, so I won't be spending a ton of time on the details, but quite frankly, the main things are these performance metrics. So you see travel time reliability, which is a key metric. For those who aren't aware what that means, it's basically the variability in travel times, which is frustrating for drivers. And they want to make sure that they arrive at their destination 95% of the time on time. And if a facility is unreliable, they have to leave earlier. And you can monetize that because that's their time. It's like delay. Congestion delays you on the road. Travel time reliability issues, you could be spending that time at home. Instead, you start your drive a bit earlier. We'll be looking at congestion, and that's both speed-based, so how fast the vehicles are driving, as well as density, how many vehicles are within a mile on a given lane. And we're doing that for both 101 and 46. Obviously, we're looking at collision rates by location, as well as multimodal connectivity. And that's for transit, ped and bike, and park and ride lots. And I won't go into this, but this is the whole array of performance metrics that will be used to drive that benefit cost analysis. The far right column, the far right two, is whether it can be monetized, and then the far right is whether it can be, quantified, and then the far right column is whether it can be monetized. Not all metrics you can attach a dollar to, but they're still important. The CTC still wants to see them. So we're gonna report on all these metrics. For our baseline performance, we focused on a subset of those to assess the baseline conditions. So real quick, I wanted to point this out because it's kind of interesting, and maybe you've seen a presentation on this before, but you're probably wondering, so the pandemic has eased up. Folks are getting back to their travel behavior that was pre-pandemic. But we took a look at a number of locations on US 101, and as you can see, we're not quite there. You can see the big drop, that's 2020. And so you can see in a number of locations, volumes are just getting back to where they were back in 2014, 2015. So time kind of stood still for about 6 or 7 years due to the pandemic. And this is another example where this is VMT calculated by segment length and volume. And you can see the big drop in 2020. We're at 2023, which is right around where we were in 2014, which ironically is when the US 101 Mobility Master Plan was developed. So I'm going to go over these fairly quickly, but this is level of service. And you can see where it's orange or yellow, that's where you see congestion. This is based on density. And the small bubbles, those are merge, diverge, ramp influence areas. So that's where cars are trying to either get on the freeway or get off. That's where you see a lot of turbulence. And that's where you see most of your density issues. That's in the AM and the PM on the right. And so this is travel time reliability. as well as congestion based on speed. And as you can see in the AM, just south of Paso Robles, you have a problem area, and then on 46 itself is unreliable. So lots of variability in travel speeds and times. And that's both in the AM and the PM. And then this is our collision mapping. So the one on the left is your fatality rate map, fatality rate map. And as you can see, just south of Paso Robles, and then on 46 itself, as you head east at the juncture with 101. And it should be no surprise, this is where you saw a lot of the unreliability. That influences or can be a factor in collisions and safety if folks aren't anticipating congestion and all of a sudden it's right on them and they're not anticipating it. On the right is your severe injury rate map. So the darker the color, the higher the rate. And as you can see, even though volumes are lower near the county line, you do have very high fatality rates for collisions. You also have a couple right at the juncture of 46, and then further on south on 101, where you saw most of the issues with the merge-diverge influence areas. So those are very related. So this bubble diagram kind of just summarizes all that. And this map is important because we want to identify improvements that address these measures that we can quantify, because that allows us to actually incorporate that into our benefit cost, get the biggest bang for buck, and come up with a very attractive package of improvements that can be fondly looked at by the CTC. In terms of the analysis on 101, we also took a deeper dive on State Route 46. It's not a freeway per se at this point. There's a lot of access points, driveways, and so that's best analyzed using microsimulation. And so we have four scenarios for you to show you our microsimulation. Hopefully nobody gets seasick by looking at it. Oops. So this is existing conditions, and this is 46 at Union Road. And you can see this is at Golden Hill. Things aren't so bad. Traffic moves pretty good. You do have some southbound queues there, and this is the infamous off-ramp at 46. And we know this gets really bad on Sundays. So fast forward, this is now the future, 2045 at Union Road, and you see that long queue. And all those vehicles want to turn right. There's a very high right turn percentage, so that's a major issue. This is Golden Hill Road, getting that queuing on the north leg, but not too bad. It's still doing okay. And yeah, and this just gets worse and worse. And we all know that this is also underway to get improved. But let's go to phase one. This is this is moving fast. This is Union Road. And you know there's a lot of growth planned north of here. And this is still a full functioning intersection at Golden Hill. So it seems to be doing well. But if you notice at Union Road, that long queue had disappeared. So phase one took care of that. And we are not reflecting the improvement at 46. So you'll continue to see this not looking very good as part of this. So here's phase two. So here's your full interchange. Traffic moving very well. This is the Cadillac version. Golden Hill is now right in, right out. So things are flowing well, and it's not a lot of congestion. And again, this is your 46 off-ramp. When we're finished with this, we will reflect the improvements at 46. So, and fact, we're coordinating with Consor, who's the engineering firm that's doing the design work for the 46 off-ramp, and they've provided us some schematics and plans that we can work into the simulation. And that improvement will be part of this package of improvements for 46. So with that, here's the contact information. John DeNunzio for SLOCOG is the project manager for SLOCOG. That's my name. And then Kendall Flint is our lead for public outreach. So I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Jim. Any questions for Jim? Heather?
Hi, a question and just a recommendation regarding outreach. I had mentioned to both Pete and John, if you could hit Atascadero Kiwanis, you will get a very big group and diverse from the other two, so that would be, if there's time for that. With regards to the bottom of our staff report, F35, and it talks about unserved areas in Atascadero, Paso Robles, and Templeton, should that be underserved? Because it says, like for example, it says 59% of the Paso Robles area is unserved and 21% in Atascadero unserved. That sounds
yeah, well,
very
that
high.
Term comes from the transit capacity and performance manual. And it's basically, it is kind of cut and dry. Basically, we were looking at transit supportive densities for households and how close or how many of those are within a half mile of a 101 or a parallel facility. So if you're outside that buffer, you're considered unserved. If you're inside, you're considered served.
Okay, so, there's a definition, but people shouldn't take away from this that 59% of people in Paso Robles or 21% of people in Atascadero have no access to transit.
Right. Okay. No, we can make that change.
Okay.
That's a good suggestion.
When I first read that, I thought that seems
pretty
wow.
harsh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you.
Any other questions for Jim? Yeah. No? Okay, great. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Going out to the public, we do have one request to speak. Eric?
Thank you, Eric Greening. And I appreciate the process. One thing we should be looking at, knowing how... And obviously, we don't know whether a sales tax will even be put on the ballot, much less approved. We know that most of the resources, funding resources for carrying out anything in this plan, in the absence of such a sales tax, will basically be a gamble of what we can get by begging, to put it kind of bluntly, from sources that don't always have our interests central. What are the lowest cost ways to address some of the issues? And let's use the interchange at Kerberil and 101 as an example, especially for people coming off the 101 southbound, making a left turn, where there's this sort of semi-blind area that people are coming from, and they often just keep coming to the extent that traffic backs up trying to get off of that off-ramp. We're not yet, to my knowledge, at the point where it backs up into the travel lanes, but that could be coming. I know there's an idea of roundabouts that costs. Perhaps signals, at least as an interim measure, to make the flow more orderly. And if that costs too much, am I totally pushing the envelope here? Four-way stops at each side of the freeway, basically for each set of on-ramps and off-ramps. Yes, it will take people on Kerberil a minute longer to get across town, but the impact in terms of orderly traffic flow and not having people back up onto 101 waiting for their chance to make a left turn, the payoff, I would think, would be very, very much worth the minimal investment in cost few stop signs and time. So I hope that the process doesn't bias us toward the bells and whistles solutions where you can have nice big ribbon cuttings and a whole lot of hoopla. Sometimes there are some very low-cost solutions that at least in an interim basis can make the unviable more viable. And I think we need to recognize that we are in times that demand a certain level of austerity and look for those solutions. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't have any other requests to speak, so we will. Oh, Andy. Mm-hmm.
A comment rather than a question, and building on Mr. Greening's remarks, really looking forward to the analysis and the study. And I do hope that we include in kind of the options, like what would it look like if we had a really robust investment in transit? Like what if we had bus service that came every 15 minutes at long hours, et cetera? So is that the type of thing that that we might be able to mitigate some of the concerns? I have sometimes felt just limited by the time these infrastructure projects are so long, and then we build our housing plans and our environmental analysis on a really expensive set of infrastructure components, and sometimes we might get stuck on that lack of funding. So to at this early stage be able to do a really broad analysis so that future slow cog boards can look at some cost benefits of different options. It's not just like this is the big expensive overpass that we need to make this work. And so that would be my request, is that if we can integrate more options than simply the big infrastructure ones. Thank you.
Great.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Brad.
Just building slightly on those comments. In Paso Robles, we did that kind of study that for the type of thing that Eric was mentioning. And it turned out that the traffic signals are much too expensive with all the other infrastructure that has to go into it. Stop signs and then the final solution seems to be the frugal way to be able to do it and accomplishes the purpose, basically.
Great. Don't see other... any other lights on, so I want to thank John and Jim for the presentation, and we will receive this. That's all we need to do on this one. So we are going to move on to F4 on our agenda, and that's Rich. Did I see Rich?
Yeah, Rich in the room.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
Good morning. I promise, Pete, that I'll be brief and try to keep it at 5 minutes. We have the 11:20 alarm that will be coming in, and that will affect this because I'm calling in on the cell phone. And before we jump into this, just as a reminder, this is an iterative process. We've been going through this throughout the year. Page F44 on your staff report really sort of summarizes the one-page script, if you will, for this particular agenda item as it relates to our funding approach. But for those new to the discussion, it seems prudent to just hit a few background slides. So let's hit that real quick. Next slide there, Tim. We have SLOCOG discretionary funding sources. Four of them are listed on the bottom. We provided in the August board meeting, links and discussion on the various project eligibility for these four funding programs. They're siloed. They could be addressed individually. Our approach has been for about the last four funding cycles is to bring them all together in a single fund cycle and to do our best to maximize our implementation of our Tier 1 projects and to leverage and match grants where possible. Next slide, Tim. The expected revenue and timing of grants, what you've seen in the past has been this top level in purple, which are the four SLOCOG funding programs, $43.8 million over 5 years. With that sort of that cash flow, if you will, based on projects ready to list date. What we wanted to also convey to you is just how the grant season that John from Caltrans had noted interplays with our programming. We're entering into, for instance, Cycle 7 of the Active Transportation Program that the CTC, California Transportation Commission, administers. All those in blue there. From SCCP, you heard the discussion from Jim Dankwich with respect to the North County 101 Corridor Plan, which is a requirement, a prerequisite, if you will, for any projects pursuing SCCP funds. And then, of course, the Trade Corridor, the local partnership program. And then under the federal programs, just how they tie into our cycle of our revenue availability, those are annual grants through the IIJA process. And as it relates to rounding out various funding profiles for projects, of course, local funds is a key component and has some variability to it, negotiated in many respects as it relates to ability to pay for the agencies. Next slide, Tim. And what's different from today than what you saw in August is the available capacity at the after we've had this discussion in August of program off the tops, where we spoke about SLOCOG's regional programs. Those are listed there again, just in the table, the local choice funds that we make available to the agencies, and then the capital contingencies, where last time we had $11.5 million in that line item. We've dropped it from 11.5 to 4.5 for a number of sound reasons, of which we can get into that a bit later as the discussion unfolds here. So this is net demonstrating we have $35 million of available program capacity for the fund cycle. Just as a reminder, throughout the year, we had discussions of our Tier 1 projects. We examined the budget scope schedule. We did that in the spring. We did a thorough needs assessment of these near-term projects, which have been labeled and dubbed as Tier 1. We have a good sense of the funding needs throughout on these near-term projects. And we did a very extensive presentations, if you will, on four top-tier projects in August. You heard from the project sponsors on those, and we could examine that further as needed. So getting into what our program approach is, starting in the Central and South County, this really relates all to Table 1. This is trying to put just some conceptual to Table 1. We break it out at the start, Central and South County, subregions, and, of course, U.S. 101 and 227, these two highway systems functioning as a network along with parallel route systems as in multimodal elements as well. So we discussed last time the need for these fully funded projects to have 10.5 of contingency was our estimate, and we have ratchet that back to $4.5 million. And also, we discussed the Prado Road Corridor overcrossing pretty thoroughly at the last board meeting. And this project, as we were what was shared then, was it has escalated up to $92 million. All that being said, under Table 1, our suggested approach is to, under Projects 1 through 4, those fully funded, reducing the contingency for those four, I said 4.5, that's because we're holding one for another project that will be discussed later, down to 3.5. In part, the SB1 program that funded the U.S. 101 Managed Lane, the way the baseline agreement has been established, our percentage of match that we made back in 2022 limits our exposure to cost increases significantly. So that's good news. And all that said, we've been able to bring this down. That baseline agreement has been entered into, or will soon be entered into, with Caltrans and the California Transportation Commission. Then the next set of projects, 5 through 9 there, you can see the recommendations. Really just to put focus on Prado Road, what this represents is a total of $9.2 million. We're adding 3.2 to the 6 already committed, 10% contribution, and working with the city with their efforts to pursue either state and or federal grants. 227 Los Ranchos needed a little bit of a a roundup to chase the cost escalation. You have 1.1. We wanted to make certain we have proper full design funds in place for the Buckley Road, Crestman Road, Edna Trail Segment 1. That's what the 950 there is for. And then what we're calling a new start is Edna Valley Trail Segment 2. It's the continuation of the Edna Trail and the trail from Los Ranchos to Farmhouse Road. So that is the recommended capital investment approach for the South and Central counties. Subregions, excuse me. Jumping into the North and North Coast, you heard from John and Jim as it relates to the 101 corridor, the Dogleg East towards Jardine. And we already have some projects in the queue. We heard a little bit about that from Jim just a moment ago. And we'll walk through the next investments on that. I don't know if I said next slide, Tim, and if you're able to keep track, I presume you are. So we're on the North County and North Coast Corridor Investments slide. Next image. And we heard this discussion in detail from the city manager last month, Ty Lewis. And similarly, with Prado Road, we're maintaining a 10% commitment, which is reflected in Table 1. And also on the North Coast, as it relates to State Route 1 and 41, which we heard the next slide. We heard from Greg Qualick at the City of Morro Bay on the timing and status of the 141 roundabout project. Next slide. And that was that shows a preferred alternative concept. We've had considerable discussions with Caltrans District 5 on a funding approach to bring them in as a partner. We're super grateful for their proactive efforts to work with both the city and SLOCOG to offset some of our liability as it relates to our funding exposure, if you will, to completing this project to full construction costs. And as such, Table 1 identifies under that section, next slide, Tim, under line item 17, using the 141 discussion, $2.4 million of additional SLOCOG funds and reducing the exposure to the city by about $1.2 million, and then in Caltrans District 5 in a SHOP project, a State Highway Operations Program project where they're doing roadway preservation work on Highway 1, they're able to come in and offset the balance of cost and needs to fully fund that project. And again, looking up that list on Table 1, you see the other investments. The $2 million in addition to SR 46 Union is to provide that 10%, as noted. We needed $2 million additional to keep the pre-construction investments going for the 46 East 101 project. That's the design phase. And with respect to 46 West Interchange, the east-west roundabouts, and the mobility hub on the southwest quadrant, this is a partial investment as well. It's closer to 30% as it relates to the total cost, and we would be using the $4 million as leverage to pursue an SB1 grant in that effort. So we do have a new start there at the bottom, which is the Chorro Valley Trail, and which is the San Luis Obispo to Cuesta vicinity of State Route 1, and that is recommended at $1.7 million. And go to the next slide, Tim. So in summary, this straw man proposal identifies $18.9 million in capital investments. It reaffirms the $4.2 million of set-aside that we discussed in August. It identifies a contingency budget of $4.5 million. I kind of brushed over where that other million was going, and that was on the prior slide, which was the Morro Bay to Cayucos connector. It's fully funded through an active transportation grant. We are looking and feel very confident with a Cycle 2 Community Betterments Grant Program, Safe Streets for All, using the program framework as outlined in the staff report as a baseline, similar to Cycle 1. And then that leaves an uncommitted balance. So of that $35 million that we spoke about, we have an uncommitted balance of over $8 million. And we aren't suggesting at this time to make any direct commitments of those funds to keep them off on the side, but acknowledging their existence. Of course, we did have an item in the consent calendar, which was C4, as it relates to the status of Cycle 1 community betterments and the concern for contingency needs there. And there are some cost increases that we're identifying. And we know that there are at least two, possibly three projects that are running into some shortfalls as it relates to their bids that have been coming in. And we may look at this uncommitted balance to assist there. Another opportunity could be that if we're unsuccessful on the 227 corridor, and as we discussed before in August, our approach is to sue a federal grant for the Buckley Road roundabout. If we're unsuccessful, perhaps these uncommitted funds could be then available to us in a timely manner, and we could direct and target them towards the Buckley Road roundabout. And then the other alternative is just increasing the pot, if you will, for cycle two of the betterments. So whatever we might not do with this uncommitted amount of money of 8.6, it could be added to the community betterment cycle two. That is, in short, the discussion of the straw man proposal. This is simply to highlight the next slide, Tim, if you will, under the STIP fund match. Demonstrates these three large capital projects: Union Road, Prado, 46 West. That's the total project cost: $56 million, $92 million, $17 million. You can see that this grant season will be pursuing about 72% of the total project cost of $165 million will be a grant request. I think it adds up to about, you can see there that there's local funding commitment of 17% and SLOCOG commitment of 11%. Something to keep in mind of the SLOCOG portion of the match for these three projects, if any one of these projects isn't successful, the guidelines for STIP program, because we would be directing STIP funds to each of these, the guidelines for the STIP program requires us to reprogram the money, and that's what the narrative there is at the bottom of the page. So I think I can wrap it up, since the 11:20 might be coming sooner than we think. This last slide, if you will, Tim, STIP and uncommitted grant funds, shows those same three projects, the total dollar amounts as we pursue each of them with our partners, the City of Paso Robles, the City of San Luis Obispo, and in the case of 101 46 West, you know, we'll have our partners at the county and Paso as supporting cast. They aren't funding partners, no local funds there. In green shown, it is primarily a state-to-state route, which Caltrans and SLOCOG is working to develop grant application for in the future. And I think that will wrap up my discussion under the next steps. If you go to the very last slide there, we're going to, under attachment B, it shows those four silos of discretionary monies that we have: the STIP, the CMAQ, Surface Transportation Block Grant Program, the Carbon Reduction Program, and how we intend to distribute the money by projects. The first column is the project numbers. That's in your staff report under page F411, attachment B. And of course, lining it with the ready-to-list date and the fiscal year in which the revenue is available. So there's still a bit of a tap dance to do there. The uncommitted balance that I spent a little bit of time talking about, we want to obviously have a more concrete approach come December. That's $8 million that we're just putting on the shelf. So we'd like to come back and give you a sense of the likelihood and timing. It shouldn't say Los Ranchos, but the likelihood and timing of the Buckley Road roundabout securing funding. It may just not line up with our the requirements of expending this uncommitted balance of money. So we might have to really come in with an approach on what to do with the eight. So that other second and third bullet, fully understanding the community betterment shortfalls is key. We know that there are needs there from cycle one. Of course, developing recommendations as part of the draft 2024 RTIP would be woven into there if we need to redirect any of those $8 million to any of these projects we just spoke about. We'll have a public hearing in December and transmit the draft program of projects and the expenditure of $35 million to the CTC on December 15th. Of course, we wouldn't be doing the community betterment cycle two as part of that at this point in time, but we will in December come back to you with a summary of the statements of interest from our partners and begin the discussion on the guidelines and policies and as it relates to the framework that's attached in your staff report today. But I'll leave it there, Madam President, and happy to answer questions or Pete can field them if it's more convenient to do it that way.
Okay, thank you, Rich. Any questions? I don't see any lights to my right. Andy?
Quick question, if you could clarify the betterments grant, the cycle one, is the contingency, are we thinking that's out of this, you know, line two uncommitted balance of $8 million, that the potential shortfall of cycle one would be out of that $8 million, or would it be out of the, would we adjust cycle two? I wasn't quite sure. It seems like there's clearly going to be some shortfalls.
Sure. No, and that's a fair question. If the board felt very strongly about holding all the funds, the uncommitted balance, as a position one to go to the 227 corridor if we're unsuccessful in completing a grant and securing a grant to fund the Buckley Road roundabout, the Crestmont Road improvements, and Edna Trail segment one, then what you just asked about, the community betterments program of $8 million would need to be first position there, which go towards the shortfalls. But if we're not, I think if when we come back in December, we're going to have a better sense of the timing to secure a federal grant for Buckley Road is even realistic with the time constraints as it relates to this uncommitted balance. And my sense is it is unrealistic, and thereby, since it very likely will be unrealistic, I think then this uncommitted balance, there's going to be a little bit more flexibility. We can address our cycle one shortfalls from it, and we can do some other things at that point in time.
Great. So
we have some. Yes.
So it sounds like we're committed to making up any potential shortfalls. We're just not quite sure where that's going to come out of yet.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly.
Great. Thank you.
Anybody else? Okay. Oh. Jimmy. How do I not see that? I gotta move my angle.
Yeah, yes. This monitor right here.
That's right. They're blocking your light.
Thanks, Rich, for the presentation, wherever you are. Just a couple quick questions. I guess one of them builds on the fact that we talk a lot about the Infrastructure and Investment Jobs Act, IIJA, in the staff report, but not the Inflation Reduction Act. And I just want to make sure that we're tracking that, because I know there were a number of programs, for example, the Federal Highway Administration Program, Neighborhood Access and Equity Program. And just if you could just confirm that we're tracking those dollars as well.
Yes, we are tracking all discretionary funds that we have at our disposal that can go towards our surface transportation program. You know, Pete mentioned some additional transit funds. It's not from the Inflation Reduction Act, but this is all focused on the surface transportation program, and we are accounting for all the federal discretionary funds that we have at our disposal. Any additional funding would be competitive grant programs, of which we are also doing our best to track. And, of course, that is the primary goal on a lot of these, is to secure some of the grants that are made available through any of the two federal grant programs or legislation and acts that exist, as well as SB1.
Okay, excellent. And then the staff report on page F48, it's paragraph 19, speaks to new starts and specifically addresses US 101 Main Street Templeton, US 101 Fair Oaks Arroyo Grande, and State Route 1 Halcyon Road in Napomo. I know the county is actively working on the latter two projects. I guess, does that note there about essentially planning for those regional projects imply that we need to get through the planning initiation document phase before we'll find them on table one? Or if you could just elaborate on that a little bit, I'd appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, there is the project initiation phase, which is the project study report that needs to be completed. But then there is before we considered stepping into those new starts, we wanted to really make certain that we had an approach that allowed us to advance these projects already in the queue. The Community Betterments Grant Program could be an avenue that an agency could pursue grant funds for from SLOCOG. So, for instance, the US 101 Fair Oaks Complete Streets Project may be presented to us through a community betterment call for project, and then it would advance its way into our lineup, if you will.
Okay, and the community betterments program, if our board decides to head in that direction with, you know, funding it with discretionary funding in December, would we be looking at the similar $750,000 cap as a staff recommendation?
I think if we, yes, let's just start there, the baseline. I see that number possibly going up, but to 1 million, but I think as a baseline, yes.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks for answering my questions. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any other lights.
If I could just provide one more comment. One item that's not on your staff report for consideration in the straw man is any contribution towards Antelope Grade. And we previously had highway infrastructure, highway improvement funds programmed out there. And we have received a request from Caltrans to consider retaining that $1.2 million request as a contribution towards Antelope Grade, which is a $100 million project. So you may see that come back at your next meeting, just as a heads up.
Thank you. Okay. No more questions here. I don't have any requests to speak. Oh, yes, Jeff?
Mm-hmm. Real quickly, Jeff Straw with the Regional Transit Authority. Appreciate the straw man funding. That means it's all coming to me. Just kidding. The one thing I do want to mention, though, this really does look at the surface roadway projects and then some active projects as well, the trails. There are some real transit needs that aren't addressed in this round, or at least in this discussion, but there are some significant shortcomings or shortfalls for funding for transit. The last time our short-range transit plan for RTA in the city of San Luis Obispo was completed in 2016, those are expired, and since then the requirements that we move towards zero emission vehicles has been adopted. We had a kickoff meeting yesterday for our short-range transit plan, which will give us a roadmap towards meeting those needs. The RTA board has adopted our innovative clean transit rollout plan, which identifies those costs. Those costs aren't incorporated in here. I know the city of San Luis Obispo is currently finishing their ICT plan as well, their rollout plan. So there are some significant needs that aren't addressed as part of this, but it needs to be included in the regional transportation improvement plan, which then gets rolled into the federal transportation improvement plan. So I just wanted to mention that this wasn't included as part of this discussion, but there are some significant shortcomings for funding.
Thank you. Okay, we are bringing this back to the board. And I did mention there were no requests to speak. So if there are, and I haven't gotten the slips, bring them up now. We are asked to take board action today, I believe, to provide input on straw man funding approach for Tier 1 projects, Table 1, and also provide direction on programming approach for uncommitted balance of available funds. So
we have sufficient direction.
Okay, you're feeling like you have the direction. Anybody need to add or subtract anything that was brought up today? So we need a voice vote on that. This is what my scripts tell me. You need a voice vote on the board action of what I just said. Is that true or not true?
I'm not certain that an actual action is necessary.
Okay.
This entire item will be coming back to your next meeting. Yeah.
Then I'm going to call it a receive and file, and that.
That's fine.
We're good.
Yep.
Okay. Jimmy, did you have something else to say on it?
I was going to make a motion. But I think
okay. Yeah.
Sorry. Then can I just ask for clarification about Jeff Straw's comments? Is that are we saying that we need to do some adjustments at some point to incorporate those transit needs, or are we saying that just heads up? That's a different effort, different funding pot. I just want to make sure that that gets.
The next item may enlighten you to the transit funds that we do have coming in, the windfall of the SB 125 funding. You know, we did not do a call for projects in this round. The STIP, the State Transportation Improvement Plan, while transit capital is eligible, we are such at a shortfall for highway, street, and road money that typically our State Transportation Improvement Program, or RTP money, has gone to street and road projects, not transit projects. That's the urgency with this item. You know, on the table is the federal money, the congestion mitigation air quality management money, of which RTA is eligible. And so we can take a further look at what transit capital projects may be eligible for this surplus funding in the CMAQ pot that we have before we come back in December.
Yeah, that would be great to have kind of a coordinated, when it comes back in December, based on the next funding available from the next item, and just making sure that we're understanding if there were, if staff had made considerations and choices, just to clarify what those were and the reasoning behind it, which, you know, makes sense from what I'm hearing so far. Thank you.
Right.
Don, did you had a question?
Back on the antelope, is it called the antelope?
Antelope grade. Yeah.
Antelope grade. I just, you know, how much, I mean, we were lucky to get the interchange in the first place. And so $1 million back as investment or commitment from the community. I mean, I just want to recognize the importance of as much as all these other things are all important, but the fact that we are stuck in two highways going east and west with all our tourism. Oh. Never mind. And commercial stuff. Are we supposed to get up and go? Oh, yeah.
I think if you push the side button, it'd stop it.
Yeah, this was.
We're all just going off.
Excellent.
Yeah, we appreciate the comment. We sense that you're supportive of some additional funds towards.
That's correct. Grade. That's correct.
Thank you. Okay. Any other comments on this item? Otherwise, we'll be readdressing this in December. Okay. Very good. Then we are going to move to item F5 on our agenda. And we've got Stephen. Transit and Intercity Rail Capital Program and Zero Emission Transit Capital Program Update.
Fred, you're special.
Well, that was exciting. Stephen Hanamaikai, SLOCOG staff, presenting the update on the Transit Intercity Rail Capital Program and the Zero Emission Transit Capital Program. Over the next 4 years, we expect to receive about $33 million from these two new sources. We're taking the steps to allocate that first $16 million. The remaining funds are subject to annual appropriations, so just note that. The objectives, the funding objectives of these new funds really are coming from three different sets of policies and laws. The underlying is within the TRCIP. This is a historically competitive grant program. It was created to modernize transit systems, and projects funded through that program must both reduce greenhouse gas emissions and increase transit ridership. The second is the new program, ZETSIP. That's pretty straightforward. That's for the purchase of zero-emission buses and charging infrastructure. And then SB 125, this created this formulaic program that we're talking about with the intention of restoring and sustaining services to what they were at pre-pandemic levels. And it was really also a vote of confidence in regional boards like this, in that SB 125, unique to many other grants throughout the state, didn't add any additional guardrails. So projects really are decided at the regional level. As far as the steps that we need to take to receive this first $16 million, the first thing we need to do is, after accounting for what are described as historically high state and federal transit funding sources, showing that we don't have any operational deficits relative to a 2022 service baseline. Based on the information we have and some slight forecasts, we don't think that there will be any operational deficits. But if there are, we need to come up with a plan of, after accounting for all those funding, as well as this $33 million, how will the operators mitigate service cuts? How will they restore services? How will they avoid layoffs? How will they avoid fare increases? So that's a little bit longer path to completing that plan. But if we don't have that deficit, it's fairly straightforward. We need a project list and descriptions of the projects and the proposed uses through 2026-27 and a set of operator data. And really, this isn't scored. Like I said, I think that's really a vote of confidence in this board is that the state is just assessing whether we've provided all the information that they've asked for. There's a potential list that we've been talking about at the staff level of how we could use this first $16 million. We want to set aside a pretty hefty portion to try and attract some grant funding through the competitive side of this TRCIP program for those four rail components at the top, really throughout the county, along the entire corridor. We want to set aside funding for zero emission buses and charging infrastructure, implement a region-wide tap to pay fare system that's been referred to as the Cal ITP program, and then look at some planning documents to assess, where are the charging needs and where should those go for a region-wide zero emission bus system, as well as looking at some of those larger ideas, things like 15-minute headways and through a comprehensive operations analysis. We'll come back in December with a final list. This is just our list of ideas. As far as next steps, we need to confirm that forecasted operational need isn't in existence through 26-27. Work with the operators to compile some data. Those are referring to the eligible recipients there in Paso Atascadero, City of SLO, City of Morro Bay, as well as the services operated by RTA and the South County Transit. And then we need to assess different opportunities to implement eligible projects from each of those eligible recipients. Short and sweet, with staff recommendation to prepare the initial draft allocation package. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Stephen? Anybody to my right? Andy?
Yes. Can you go back to the slide with the breakdown of potential? Yes, this one. Whoop. Yeah. So new platform at Cal Poly, $5 million. Can you talk a little bit more about that one? I don't remember that one.
Yeah. Pete might be best to address that one.
This potential project has been raised by Losan staff as a scenario to extend some trains north of the San Luis Obispo train station during Cal Poly Royal or during, you know, when parents come to town, maybe not for every frequency. This would obviously have to be a partnership project if it was a $5 million capital project. If there's room, who knows if there's even room by the stadium there at Cal Poly to create a platform there. So this is really a first cut at some of the projects that have been raised as potential projects.
So I guess I can't help but wonder, it's not very far and doesn't seem like it would necessarily get that frequent of a use, and I just can't help but wonder if strategic shuttle buses on those high utilization might be a better use of fund. I'm not sure where that's coming from and who to kind of talk to about a different approach altogether on that one.
Yeah, and hopefully that's, you know, a concept that's explored in the short-range transit plans. You know, the underlying policy for this program is to both increase ridership and reduce greenhouse gas emissions, so I can certainly see how that would fall within the guidelines of the program.
Great, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions? I don't have any requests to speak. I don't see anyone. Oh, Jeff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mentioned the shortfalls and program or table four, the program transit vehicles. I think there's some misunderstanding about what's really outstanding for what's needs to be replaced over these next few years. And this is the first I've seen the project list, the proposed project list. We look forward to collaborating with SLOCOG staff on maybe refining this a little further because there are some significant costs that we're going to incur to make the transition to zero emission vehicles. So we look forward to working with staff on this.
Thank you. Back to the board.
If I just like to add that we also intend to do a more formal request for projects, working with RTA and other transit operators to make sure we're capturing the universe of potential projects. You know, and I think Stephen made it pretty clear that we don't have access to the full $33 million, you know, but there is an advantage to attracting and getting as much as this $16 million in our bank accounts immediately, as we can accrue interest on that $16 million as long as we have qualifying projects. And then there's an opportunity to do project description modifications and change the program of projects. So that's one of the strategies we're pursuing.
Okay. So today we're being asked to, on a voice vote, direct staff to prepare the draft initial allocation package. So I guess maybe what I would be wondering, and maybe others, is if there are other projects that we don't know about yet, we'll have the freedom to be able to kind of pivot and...
Right, and we hope you'll see all of those in December.
December, yeah.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions or concerns, comments? Then what we will need is a motion to direct staff to prepare the draft initial allocation package.
So moved.
Andy?
Second.
And Carla? And this is just a voice vote, so all in favor?
Aye.
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 And any abstentions or opposition to this motion? Perfect. Then we have arrived to item number 7 on our agenda, which if there are any board members that want to make further comments on any items, whether they're on the agenda or not, and board members at this time may update board on regional, national, statewide meetings they attended.
I think that's me. So just let you know that next Tuesday, LOSAN is going to be having a special meeting on rail with Deputy Director of Caltrans and staff from the rail side. And we're going to be looking primarily at the LOSAG corridor, but that also includes looking at the connections or possible extensions north. So, but that conference is going to concentrate more on the south than the north. But we'll get our dibs in. And then also we had the full board meeting of LOSAN mid-month. And at the end of the month, both Pete and I will be in Boise, Idaho, working with the National Association. Thank you.
Thank you, Fred, for all your service. Anyone else? Comments? Anything? Okay, then I'm going to adjourn the meeting, and it is funny to say that the next scheduled SLOCOG board meeting will be held December. I can't believe we're almost to December 6th, 2023 at 9 a.m. right here. Yeah. Thank you all.